Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. South Dakota now has the fourth highest rate for incarceration for women in the country. Later in the hour, we talk about a new NOVA special that explores the science of addiction. According to the National Institute on Drug Abuse, the average cost of treatment for a drug addict is $4,700. Compare that to the cost of $24,000 average to incarcerate someone. Not only is incarcerating people struggling with addiction expensive, it's proving to be ineffective. It's a situation certain to become worse as the meth and opioid epidemics sweep the nation. South Dakota News Watch journalist Bart Fancook has written about the dramatic growth of female inmate numbers, and he joins us now from SDPB's Black Hills studio to talk about his investigation. Bart Fancook, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Tell me how this particular investigation got started. When did you start looking into the numbers of women who are incarcerated in the state?
Well, I'm on a panel locally here to a coalition that fights drug and alcohol abuse among youth, particularly Native youth. And the issue kept coming up that mothers were in prison and how that was really damaging the family, particularly in the Native community where it's a matriarchal society. And so I heard a couple of those stats that you just gave, and it really triggered for me a desire to look a little deeper and find out what was driving this and what are the impacts and also the outcomes.
All right, so where do you go to get some answers?
Well, you drive to Pierre and you make an arrangement to tour the prison, meet with some inmates, and also talk to the Secretary of Corrections, Denny Kamink, and others who are on both the front end and back end of the issue in terms of treatment and then reintroduction into society. And it's not a pretty picture.
Yeah. You mentioned mothers, and I think it's important to also distinguish. Many of these women are actually pregnant at the time. So fathers are very important, and mothers are as well. But what's the children who grow up with the parent who is incarcerated? What are the odds that they'll end up being incarcerated themselves?
Well, some studies have shown that up to 80% of children who have a parent in prison will someday end up in prison themselves.
Wow.
And I will tell you, Lori, when you sit and talk to these people who are now sober, of course, it's heartbreaking to hear the stories of how they, when meth takes a hold of them, they don't think about their children. They don't think about themselves. They really can't think about anything except getting more of the drug. And when you hear the stories of how the children have been left with unstable family members, put into foster care, and sometimes just kind of floating around, it's difficult, and you wonder how life is going to be for those kids living in such instability.
One of the things we'll talk about when our NOVA producer is on later in the hour is this stigma of drug addiction. And you mentioned, when meth takes hold of someone, they don't, they don't care about their kids. That increases the stigma for mothers particularly, because there's nothing worse to be in our society, it seems, sometimes than a bad mother.
Well, a bad mother who's also a felon. And that limits your job opportunities and other opportunities in life. And I think that's one of the reasons that, if you read our story, Corrections Secretary Kamink took a very strong view that criminalizing addiction isn't effective. It's leading to generational criminal activity. And he and the assistant warden in Pierre, they also told me flat out that imprisonment for some people, for some it can help improve behaviors, but for others it's like a criminal college. And they learn ways to get drugs, commit crimes, and get away with it. And they actually are released worse off than when they went in.
All right. So some people are going to say, all right, but you're incarcerated. You have to be sober at this point. So this is it's a punishment. It's somebody is going to get off the opioid or the substance that is causing the problems in their life. They have a chance to clean up and a second chance to get it right when they get out. How come that's not happening?
It does happen, and certainly if you take someone who's breaking into homes or driving around intoxicated or out of their mind on meth, society's safer as a result. So it's inarguable that there is some positive outcomes to this. But what you see is that not treating it when they get out, plus a lot of these women are only in for the average sentence is 8 months. So that's not a lot of time to really find yourself or find a place where you can deal with your addiction. So they come out and the same triggers are there. There's a lack of programs to aid people when they do get out. So they have to make a real deep personal commitment to sobriety. And that's tough to do, especially meth as compared to, say, marijuana or alcohol or something. So you know, I will tell you that the women I met told me, prison hasn't helped me. But I couldn't help thinking, you know, and I don't take a personal view on these stories, but people have to hit rock bottom oftentimes. And for some of them, rock bottom is going to prison. Maybe it's going to prison the third time, realizing all the damage they've done to themselves, their children, their families. And I did see some that changed and said, you know, one woman said, this is it. I'm done with this life. I can't do this again. And, you know, I wished her well and certainly believed her, but the challenges are out there. So it's a mixed bag. And I understand why lawmakers want to stop the property crimes and some of the violence that occurs when these people are out on the streets.
Right. And we don't want to minimize that at all for especially the victims of those crimes. One of the challenges mm-hmm. that we'll talk about with the Nova documentary is how much addiction is seen as a moral failure and not seen as a treatable disease, that people have a hard time finding access to that treatment. And you mentioned, you know, the shorter sentence and how that might actually be problematic. Talk a little bit about some of the programs in the state prison and why it might be empty or there might not be anyone in it. What are the efforts to sort of deal with addiction behind bars in the state?
You know, there's a couple of main programs. One's called Sabisa, and that's a kind of standard drug and alcohol addiction program. I think you're referencing the intensive meth treatment facility that's there on the site in Pierre. And first of all, the short sentences, that's a longer term of a program. And so women who are in prison for, you know, 4 months or something, they really don't qualify. I was told also that there's been some changes due to not necessarily overcrowding, but maximum capacity. That's restricted their ability to dedicate personnel to that. So that program, while effective, is not being used. And I think that's something that hopefully my story will lead some people to look at, because that does seem like a failure in the system to not be utilizing that. I did meet one woman who was released from prison, and she still had her guidebooks with her in her home that she was able to just go get, and they were all marked up. And it was, I thought to myself, wow, that's cool. That's really, she's keeping those around as a reference. That was effective. And she does happen to be someone, and I haven't written about her yet. I'm saving that for another story, but she's working two jobs, and she's got custody of her children, and she's on the right path. But I thought it was interesting. She did go through the intensive meth program, and that she had those guidebooks with all of her personal notes as reminders right there in her bedroom that she could easily reference. So there is treatment there. I think one thing I found is that, again, the treatment has to be wanted. They have to be ready to accept the changes that they have to make, because they're difficult, particularly when something like meth is clawing away at you and trying to get you back, and you have to separate from your old crowd. You have to find support from others. You have to listen to advice, and you really have to make a personal commitment. And I do think that reuniting with her children in that particular case helped her realize, hey, these I love these children. These are the future for me and my family, and that was a reason to get straight.
Tell me about, and if you're just tuning in, you're listening to In the Moment on SDPB Radio. My guest, journalist Bart Fancook. You can find his story at sdnewswatch.org. And we're talking about the rising numbers of women incarcerated in South Dakota and how that intersects with some of our drug laws. And Bart, talk, if you will, a little bit about some of those drug laws, some of which are controversial, at least if, you know, we would believe Denny Kamik, who says, you know, some of the strictness of these drug laws and the way they're applied is not necessarily helping the situation for women who are suffering with addiction.
Yeah, that's right, Lori. One of the laws that really is a sticking point for him is the felony ingestion law. South Dakota's on an island in the nation in terms of that law that makes it a felony, even if you just have drugs in your system. So that's led to warrants where people have to do a urine analysis, and they could be charged with a felony and imprisoned. Some of the supporters of that law say, well, whether you're doing the drugs in front of the officer or you're caught with the drugs or not, you're still obviously involved with drug activity. And there's also kind of a sentiment, I think, in the legislature that not a lot of people are imprisoned for that. Well, that's not true. There's a significant number of people in prison for ingestion. And I think what that does is it creates this feeling where Well, I think it's a feeling of hopelessness. But either way, that law is controversial because we're the only state in the nation with such a strict ingestion law. And, it also makes it difficult if you were to go, say, to Colorado where marijuana is legal, you could come back and be tested in South Dakota, and it would be a crime that you didn't break the law there, but you did here by having it in your body. But that's leading a lot of especially women into prison. And I think that there's a sense that it's a hard line from a legal standpoint and a legislative standpoint on drug use. And I think what the Corrections Secretary is saying is, you're filling our prisons up with people who need help, and they're not getting it. And that law in particular is used to criminalize behavior that technically, you could argue there was no criminality occurring when that person was arrested. So that law in particular, and then the laws have gotten stricter about certainly about selling. Attorney General Marty Jackley's been aggressive in pursuing the dealers, and so penalties have been enhanced. And that's something that also has sent more people in for more time.
One of the things that South Dakota Attorney General Marty Jackley has said on this program, I'm sure he's said it other places too, and I asked him about some of the moral implications and some of the criticisms, and he pointed out that to him it's a moral failure to not prosecute somebody, to not use the force of the law to address, to address addiction, to address, substance abuse. And Denny Kamick sees it slightly differently in the sense, and the big question is, if where is the treatment available? If the answer is not to incarcerate people, the answer is not to let people who are abusing drugs, commit crimes in the community, where do people go for help? Are you seeing that from the women when they're on the outside, trying to figure out if they are suffering from an addiction disorder, that there's not a whole lot of places for them to go?
Well, there's certainly a limit, and I think South Dakota is behind the curve somewhat on providing treatment opportunities. Now, I will say, and let me say that I understand the Attorney General's position. Yeah. He's the top law officer in the state, and he has the constituency to answer to, and also I think he believes in what he's doing. It does seem, though, that there should be opportunities for some flexibility. Doing nothing, I don't think anyone would think is the answer, but right. We have, particularly here in West River, South Dakota, and in the Rapid City area, we have some new efforts underway, and Corrections is leading the way on those. One program's working with Lutheran Social Services, and it's to do some inpatient treatment, and then also work with the people, and this is just for women, but work with them in the community as they transition back in, and to get that treatment, and also, while they're doing that, they are drug tested, they are subject to probationary type laws, and so I think that, again, doing nothing might not be the answer, but there's got to be some flexibility in how, if every case is handled the same way, and lock them up is the answer. I think what you're seeing is that that's not working, and while it may work for some, it's probably an oversimplified approach to what's a very complex and human problem.
Right. And to be fair to Attorney General Jackley, who's not here right now, he's never argued on this show that that's the only solution. He has talked about treatment and how we need to do more in the state to move that conversation forward, as have both the candidates for our next attorney general. So it's on everybody's Certainly. Radar in some ways. Also, this issue of race, and you mentioned it at the beginning of our conversation with Native American women, how disproportionate is the population represented by Native women in the state prison?
You know, it's far above the percentage of the population, and even more so in the female inmate population than men. Mm-hmm. And that has really... That really is, it's not just a West River issue, but if you ask the prison officials, they'll tell you that a lot of those women are coming from Rapid City or Pine Ridge area, and or coming up to Rapid City. And that creates a generational problem where the parent, especially in the Native community, for a mother to be taken out of the family, it's never good for any parent to be imprisoned. But when the mother in a Native family is taken out of that equation, there's an even more dramatic loss, and the children are forced to go into either the Department of Social Services foster care system, or with other family members who might also be struggling on their own. And that's true of any population, but it is definitely disproportionately impactful in the Native community. And there are efforts. I know that recently, just within the past month or so, there's been a group that's gone over and talked to inmates to try to strengthen their cultural connection to who they are, their history, the tribe and the things they believe in. And that seems maybe a little touchy-feely, but I think that it's really critical because it gives people a reason to believe in themselves again and be proud of their culture and not feel like it's something that they have to run from. Certainly there are challenges in the Native community that are in all communities, but that is a population that's been really stung hard by the meth epidemic. And I think a lot of it stems from the poverty, the lack of education opportunities, the lack of employment and housing opportunities. All that stuff leads people to be more desperate and hopeless. And that's where meth comes in and gives them a way to feel good, even for just a few moments. And it's really driven not by race, but it's driven by the elements of the social elements of the way those oppressed communities have been treated.